In April of this year, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette ran a series of articles dealing with race relations in the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. Now, this newspaper is known as left-leaning and liberal, so it was no surprise that the articles were slanted in that direction. However, one of the topics that the writers were most concerned about was the lack of racial integration, at least by their standards, in the Pittsburgh area public schools. They reported, with all their liberal concern, that 80 of 102 area schools had a 90% or higher white student body, which is totally unacceptable to them, and which is one of the highest percentages in the country for a city of comparable size and demographics. On the same page, they gave the results of a poll that was conducted by the paper to gauge the public's opinion on the subject of school integration. When asked, "Would you have any objection to sending your children to a school where a few of the children were black?" 97% of whites and 83% of blacks answered no. If the school was one where half of the children were black, 82% of whites and 77% of blacks answered that they would have no objection. And finally, when they asked, "Would you have any objection to sending your children to a school where more than half of the children were black?" 45% of whites and 67% of blacks said no. There are two interesting facts here. One is that 33% of black parents surveyed apparently have objections to sending their children to schools that are over half black. But leave that aside for the moment. Look at the white parents' responses. If so many whites, 45%, apparently have no objection to sending their children to schools where blacks are the majority, then how can one reconcile that with the fact that among major metropolitan areas, Pittsburgh has the largest degree of racial separation in the public schools, especially when you consider that it was also shown in this same series of articles that racial separation has actually increased since 1970. Certainly, to anybody concerned about the survival of the white race, the poll results on the school integration question are very troubling and tend to suggest that many whites in the Pittsburgh area have truly accepted multiracialism. However, when we contrast those poll results with the reality of the Pittsburgh public schools, it is apparent that white people have learned one thing above all others. Whenever you are asked a question in public on a racial topic, always give the politically correct response. But these same white people have shown what their real feelings are by voting with their feet. Actions speak louder than words. Despite all the hand-wringing editorials and liberal fuming, Pittsburgh, like an ever-increasing number of other cities in America, is attempting to extricate itself from the integration fiasco. In recent months, the school board has announced that school busing for integration purposes will be ended, and a push is now underway for a return to neighborhood schools. And most significantly, the effort is not only looked upon with favor by many whites, but is becoming more appealing to blacks, who have also apparently had enough, as evidenced by one exasperated black educational researcher who summed up the view of this growing number of blacks, quote, "If this is the best that integration can accomplish, I'd just as soon have our kids in segregated schools," close quote. No one, except the most deranged white liberals, so high on their own hallucinations that they believe them to be real, should be surprised that the whole effort at integrating white and black school children has been a complete disaster. A disaster which has wasted billions of dollars, lowered scholastic standards in nearly all the schools, caused inevitable violence and racial conflicts, and resulted in no benefit to either race. If you will remember, one of the principal excuses given for school integration was that the ability and self-esteem of black students was being hindered by segregated schools. Well, even the Post-Gazette had to admit that the scholastic record of blacks has not been improved by school integration. And at least some of the integrationists knew that from the beginning. Let us go back to that fateful year of 1954, when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the long-standing separate but equal doctrine concerning public education in the case known as Brown versus the Board of Education, and which consequently made school segregation illegal. The NAACP's legal team, led by the part black Thurgood Marshall, who later became a Supreme Court justice, used fraudulent evidence, lies, and chicanery to prevail in that landmark case. But Marshall himself was mainly a figurehead for the effort. Probably much more important were the prominent Jewish organizations working behind the scenes. The fraud utilized in that case was exposed 7 years later by Dr. Kelly, professor of history at Wayne University, who was employed as an expert on constitutional history by the NAACP. During an address before the Historical Association, he described the purpose and tactics of the pro-integration team before the Supreme Court in these words, quote, "It's not that we were formulating lies. There was nothing as crude and naive as that. But we were using facts, emphasizing facts, bearing down on facts, sliding off facts, quietly ignoring facts, and above all, interpreting facts in a way to do what Thurgood Marshall said we had to do. Get by those boys down there." Close quote. One of the very significant facts they were sliding off had been derived from those now famous experiments with white and black dolls. Much has been made of the so-called experiment in which black children were asked to choose either a white or black doll. Supposedly, it was shown that the black children showed a preference for the white dolls, which thus proved, according to the NAACP, that segregating inflicts injuries upon the Negro. The justices were, they said, moved by this bit of deception and sophistry. But what was deliberately not revealed by Thurgood Marshall and the NAACP's legal team at that time was that when they performed the same test in integrated schools, the black preference for white dolls was even more pronounced. This, in fact, demonstrated, using their premise, that blacks were injured to a greater degree by integration than by segregation. Of course, their premise was ridiculous. The court knew it, and the outcome had been fixed from the beginning by a power structure beholden to our nation's enemies. This fraud, this lie, is just one among thousands perpetrated in the name of multiracialism. Given this fraudulent background, is it any wonder that school integration has had such negative effects? From their actions and admissions, we now know that most of the integrationists really did not believe that racial mixing in the schools would have any scholastic benefits for blacks, though I will concede that perhaps some naive people may have been convinced of that. But what was the real goal of school integration? Why did the Jewish organizations and mass media push it so hard? The answer to that can be found in the Post-Gazette series on school integration. One of the articles entitled, "A Look at Linton, Racially Mixed School, A Study in Successes, Problems," contains a photo taken at a Linton Middle School dance, which shows two couples, one white and one black. The liberal writers expressed their consternation that at the school dances, quote, "the students separated into small same-race groups," close quote. The sick trendies in today's media actually became upset when they did not find black boys dancing with white girls or white boys dancing with black girls. They also reacted negatively when they found very little integration in the school cafeteria. Quote, "One table is all white, another is all black. White, 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 black," close quote. this natural tendency towards separation among the young people at this integrated school is simply unacceptable. That's not what's supposed to be happening. Don't these kids understand what we've been teaching them in school, in church, and on Sesame Street for their entire lives? Befuddled liberals and dedicated Jewish activists alike are dismayed to find that healthy instinct often overrules brainwashing when it comes to actual behavior. And that scares the hell out of them. They could have seen it coming, though. Even the most casual observer could have seen years ago that even the most unbalanced of white liberals, who slobber about brotherhood virtually every conscious moment, still move away from the third world plague they have engendered in our cities in exactly the same direction and with exactly the same velocity as the white racists they decry. The fact that the majority of white teenagers still tend to socialize mostly with other whites is very good news. However, there are still those unbalanced young people who are influenced by the public school brainwashing on racial matters. Every white person who succumbs to the liberal alien propaganda and sacrifices his or her genetic heritage by mating with non-whites is a loss to us of immeasurable proportions. We must take the position that even one such tragedy is too many. We must see our situation realistically. We are a tiny minority in this world, and our lands are increasingly controlled and occupied by our deadly enemies. The fact that we are outnumbered is certainly a disadvantage, but then white people have been outnumbered in many of our finest battles, from the Crusades to the settling of North America. Just as a military unit, all the way from a division down to the platoon, must work to foster a team spirit and bolster confidence, we must do the same thing among our own friends and within our own communities. The poll results show that we whites are often afraid to speak what we know to be true, and an army of cowards cannot win any battle. We must defeat our fears. We must be an example to others who, seeing us, will conquer their own fears and join us. So many white people have simply allowed themselves to be convinced that the situation is hopeless, that any attempt to fight will only lead to failure and frustration, that as one isolated individual, you can do nothing. But the fact that you are either listening to this broadcast over the radio or via the internet or reading this essay in printed form should make you aware that you do have friends, an increasing number of friends all over this country and wherever white people live on this planet. People who, just like you, have finally decided, I've had enough and I will not take it anymore. America's enemies try to smear our separatist cause with the libel of violence and terrorism. But our enemies are the ones committing violence. It is they who send our boys to die in their wars. It is they who have bombed and burned and starved nations that would not submit to their rule. It is they who pervert our courts into instruments of injustice and our prisons into instruments of torture and murder. The blood of little children sacrificed in the name of integration is on their hands, not ours. Our enemies know that their tall tales of violent, hate-filled white people are not true. They know that the non-white terror they have brought to our shores kills more people in one day than all the so-called hate groups have been accused of for the last 30 years and more. The real fear of America's enemies is that decent white folks will wake up and realize that their neighbors and friends mostly agree with them and have just until now been afraid to speak. The real fear of America's enemies is that we will find our courage. The real fear of America's enemies is that once we have found that courage, that we will become the government, and that we will then legally, peacefully, and fairly try them for their crimes and mete out such punishment as is required by law, including, but not limited to, removing them from our society. That is their real fear. Hundreds of years ago, when the Mongol hordes of Genghis Khan attempted to enslave Europe, it was a terrible battle that lasted for decades. But we won. Many years later, when the Islamic Semites attempted the same, we turned them back, even after they made deep incursions into the heart of Europe, which lasted for hundreds of years. These desperate battles for the preservation of our race were not won in one day or one year. At times, resistance must have seemed truly hopeless. These enemies were driven back, and they were driven back only through our ancestors' patience, diligence, hard work, bravery, and above all, the recognition that the desire of the enemy was to destroy us. Is it really any different today? In order to win this battle, we must call upon those same qualities that sustained our ancestors. We must understand that if we do nothing, then we, in effect, are slaying our own children, and that everything that we hold sacred and everything that makes us what we are will be destroyed. The internal contradictions and fallacies of our enemy's scheme are becoming more obvious as each day passes. The failure of the multiracial New World Order becomes more obvious with each passing day and with each new draconian hate law they pass to stifle dissent. The climax of the age approaches. The only question is, what will you do?
Breaking down the walls of censorship, this is American Dissident Voices. Send $1 and you'll receive our catalog of suppressed books and tapes, including books and tapes you can't get anywhere else. Send $1 to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
It is my sad duty to report to you that the legal persecution of German-Canadian revisionist Ernst Zundel in Canada continues. This courageous man, a pacifist who has never uttered even a word of violence against his most vicious enemies, who has himself been a victim of a significant percentage of all the real terrorist attacks in our neighbor to the north, is being threatened with deportation. Hearings are being held, secret hearings, in which Mr. Zundel is being accused of being a threat to the security of Canada. Nothing could be further from the truth, of course. Our people's enemies are working assiduously to shut Mr. Zundel up because he speaks the truth. This is a project on which they have spent uncounted millions of the Canadian taxpayers' money over the last 11 years. Mr. Zundel's real crime is that he dares to question the motives and actions of the Jewish elite and the direction in which they are pushing Canada, America, and the rest of the Western world. And he has caught them in not a few lies. Mr. Zundel makes this elite feel very uncomfortable, and they long to see him deported to Germany, where he will be arrested and imprisoned by the puppet government there. Last year's firebombing of his house and the mail bombing attempt on his life are apparently not enough. Now he, the victim, is being called a threat to Canada's security. Those of you with email capabilities can send your polite letters of protest of this outrageous persecution of a peaceful man to Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. That's J-E-A-N-C-H-R-E-T-I-E-N, whose mail address is pm@pm.gc.ca. That's the email address of Jean Chrétien, Prime Minister of Canada. pm@pm.gc.ca. You can also write via postal mail to Jean Chrétien, Prime Minister, Room 309S, Center Block, House of Commons, Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, K1A0A6. Telephone number 613-992-4211. Fax number 613-941-6900. Once again, that's Jean Chrétien, Prime Minister of Canada, Room 309S, Center Block, House of Commons, Ottawa, OTTAWA, Ontario, Canada, K1A0A6. Telephone 613-992-4211. Fax number 613-941-6900.
You are tuned to American Dissident Voices, an island of free speech in a sea of controlled and managed news. For a catalog of books, tapes, and videos that the censors of political correctness don't want you to see, just send $1 to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
Please write today for our radio offer number 41. For a gift of $20 or more to keep this program on the air, we will send you a large packet of educational material that will begin your family's education on the things that the media have purposely kept from you. For a gift of $20 or more, you will receive a cassette tape recording of our program titled The Repatriation Solution, which examines in detail the efforts by blacks and whites, including our founding fathers, to separate the races as the only reasonable solution to the conflicts and problems inherent in our multiracial society. You will receive 7 powerful and factual leaflets in addition, our new report on black crime, our report on why the conservatives do not have the solution to our nation's problems, our report on racial differences in mental makeup, our report on the destructive nature of liberalism, our report on gun control and why our enemies want to disarm us, our report on the communist connections of Martin Luther King, and our report on racial differences in AIDS infection, which reveals why interracial sex can be a death sentence for our young people. You'll also receive the latest issues of our magazine, National Vanguard, and our monthly newsletter, Free Speech. You'll receive all 10 items as our radio offer number 41 for a gift of just $20 or more. Write today to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. That's National Vanguard Books, Department R as in radio, P.O. Box 90, that's 90, Hillsboro, H-I-L-L-S-B-O-R-O, West Virginia, abbreviated WV, 24946, USA. Remember to ask for radio offer number 41. And remember our worldwide websites, www.natvan.com. That's www.natvan.com. And www.natall.com. That's N-A-T-A-L-L. At both of these sites, you can receive the information that the censors want to keep from you, and it's all available for free. Remember our monthly publication, Free Speech, 12 illustrated and fact-packed issues for $40, and your subscription helps us to buy expensive radio and satellite time. Once again, the address is National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Overseas listeners may pay with international reply coupons or with an international postal money order. Today's program was produced by Ian McKinney and Kevin Alfred Strom. Until next time, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to do right and fear no one.